apologize for starting late. Reason being that the buses that ferry the members from the villages were a bit delayed, especially in N2 this morning. Please bear with us. We have a very tight program. There are slight amendments on the program that is before you. After I've just made some few remarks, we will listen to Anglo-American, immediately followed by DBS, and then the rest of the companies will follow as they are, Lonmin, Anglo-Gold Ashanti, then Goldfields at the end. We would want to, in welcoming all of you, to appreciate the acceptance of our invitation from the leadership of the mining companies that are before us today. And to mention the fact that we have decided to embark on public hearings on the transformation process in the mining industry. And we did listen to federations such as Chamber of Mines, SAMDA, the labor unions, and other parties that had an interest on the issue of the, specifically the implementation of the mining charter. In that process, we were found wanting as Parliament, because the Department of Mineral Resources presented to us its report, its findings in terms of the assessment that they have made on the implementation of the mining charter across companies across the country. And their picture, we must say, contained in their report is not good. It's not appetizing at all. And that after listening to the Department of Mineral Resources, which mainly put transformation, if for instance you look at the element of ownership, at about 9% of black ownership that has been achieved so far since the promulgation of the mining charter and its implementation in 2004. And all the other elements were found wanting as well. And after listening to the Department of Mineral Resources, we then were addressed by the Chamber of Mines, among others. And we were taken by surprise, because the Chamber of Mines painted a completely different picture from what the regulator, being DMR, has given us. They have indicated to us that, in fact, mining companies who are members of the chamber have exceeded even the 2014 targets that are contained in the amended mining charter, pegging the progress, for instance, on ownership at about 28%, but they qualified it and said it's a weighted average of progress that has been made thus far. Now, we interrogated this information. Then there came SAMDA, which is also a federation of small producers, that put the transformation in the same level as almost that of the department, and indeed painting a bleaker picture. They have pegged the transformation on the element of ownership at around 5%. Then we had other presenters like NUM, Solidarity, and Weber Wenzel, and other formations that came to speak to us, which more or less agreed with the picture that was painted by the department. So we felt that it is absolutely necessary and of utmost importance that we invite the group companies within the mining industry, so that for themselves, they can then take us through the situation in their own companies in measuring all elements of the mining charter, so that we can then have a feel and an understanding of how far, in their own view, have they gone. This also, we must remember that it will be counterposed to the oversight visits that we've had as the portfolio committee across the country. We visited quite a number of provinces where we would be overseeing the implementation, the compliance on the mining laws, but also making a specific emphasis on the mining charter as well as the social and labor plan implementation. What we have found, which is out there in the public domain in terms of our reports, it's an appalling situation. Mining communities specifically are trapped in abject poverty. What we have seen is a picture that is not good at all. It does not augur well for the future of this country. So therefore, whatever information you are going to be giving us, we'll interrogate it with that picture in mind, that words will not speak more than what we have seen in the actual situation. The other aspect that we requested you to speak to us about are the efforts that you are engaged in on job creation. We know that the mining industry has been one of the major employers in the country. You've made a serious contribution in that regard, even though currently figures seems to be going down. But the history of the mining industry has been that of the industry that has made serious impact when it comes to the employment levels in the country, a situation that we would like maintained, even improved. But in particular, we've asked you to speak to efforts of job creation in as far as the jobs that are targeting the youth are concerned. The reason being that when we were conducting oversight, we would deliberately convene a community meeting within the mining community in the morning, for instance at 9 o'clock. When we arrive at the venue, the hall will be packed. When we look at the audience, we would not miss that in the main it's youth. And we ask questions, why are you here at this time? Why are you not at school? Why are you not at work? And the response has been that we've done schooling as expected, but in as far as employment is concerned, we are sitting at home doing absolutely nothing. And therefore, we felt that it is necessary and incumbent upon us to nudge the mining industry leadership to basically share with us the efforts that you are embarking upon, the views that you have in terms of us arresting this situation. Because in the serious challenge of the unemployment in this country, almost 75% of the 25% people that are unemployed in this country are young people. And it's an unsustainable situation, and we keep on saying that this is a ticking time bomb. As you have seen in the past few days, a serious march that was organized, one of the issues that were highlighted by that march was the scourge of unemployment. And therefore, we would want to partner you in terms of finding a lasting solution that could assist us to deal with this. With those words, we would want to welcome you, and without wasting any further time, we would want the first presenters, being Anglo-American, I hope you are already set up, sir, that you talk us through, introduce your delegation, and please address us. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Fred Bonner, and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources, and my colleagues who are here from the industry, mining industry, my own colleagues from my own company, group of companies, ladies and gentlemen, we do welcome Chairman and thank you for the opportunity to present to you on the progress we've made on transformation and specifically in respect of the mining charter and this revised edition on behalf of Anglo American. Our presentation is going to incorporate three of our operating businesses here, the platinum business, Kumba Iron Ore, as well as Thermal Coal, and we'll include in that some of our global corporate services units, which are managed from South Africa. But before I start with our presentation, please allow me to introduce our team, as they will be involved in the discussion that will take place for the ensuing 55 minutes. On my left, Lindiwe, maybe you can just indicate who you are. You can see you, Lindiwe Sikali. She is the head of transformation and regulatory affairs, and she'll be assisting me with part of the presentation. And next to her is Linda Wedderburn. She's the global supply chain and sustainable development head, and she will also be assisting with the presentation. Yvonne Folo, she is the executive head for public affairs for Kumba Iron Ore. And next to her is Priscilla Gomez Mulu. She's the manager of stakeholder relations for our thermal coal business. And next to Priscilla, Tibelo Savana, he's the head of public affairs for the group in South Africa. And on my right is Monty Guma, who is the government relations analyst, and we will help with driving the presentation. And Musa Mabuza, sorry, I didn't see you, Musa, right at the end. Musa Mabuza is the head of government relations in our American platinum business. So, colleagues, we also have other colleagues from our sister company, but you heard that they are going to be presenting later on, so I will not be introducing them. They will be introducing themselves. These are our colleagues from De Beers as well. The presentation that is before you, it may look voluminous, that's because we are trying to cover three principal businesses within one, but we'll endeavor to complete it in the time allocated for this presentation. And we will share with you what our group looks like today, and then we will share with you the progress that we're making against both editions of the Mining Charter. And included in this presentation, for your information, are appendices. And the one appendix is the details on many of the BEE transactions that we've done since 1994. And also part of that is the presentation, really, which we loosely call our commitment to South Africa. But it details and defines all the things that we do here in South Africa. And it gives you a little bit more background. Those two appendices are not part of this main presentation, I may say. First off, we have a 94 history in South Africa, and we have three of our major commodity business units, as I mentioned, which are globally managed from South Africa, and our Exco is heavily populated by the South African colleagues, and but key to our business here is that 43% of our group operating assets, this is globally out of the 40 other countries that where we operate, are here in South Africa, and 51% of our operating profits last year came from South Africa. So this is a fairly large part of the group, and in South Africa we currently employ 91,500 people, and that's enough to fuel Soccer City on our own. The company is listed here in Johannesburg as well as in London. But just as by way of a quick overview, we mentioned the three businesses that are here, Kumba Iron Ore, Anglo American Platinum, De Beers, and then Thermal Coal, and of course we have the other sister entities, Samanco Manganese, which is managed on our behalf by BHP, as well as a small interest in Exxaro. And De Beers, which I said they're going to present on their own. Many of these names are familiar household names in this country, and so I will not talk about them in detail, but one other point I'd like to make here is that our global supply chain unit, which is a services organization, all our procurement is done from South Africa for the entire business across the globe, in the 40 countries where we operate. And equally, the global technical function for managing all the new developments as well as the inputs that we require to make sure that our mines run properly are also managed from South Africa. That's part of the global business. And we have a very large footprint here in South Africa, and this map just defines, and you see it in the pack, you know, the various mines that we have here in South Africa. And if I can just camp for a minute on this particular page, you know, that I think it's important to understand in the context of the mining industry that broadly, you know, this is our slice of our contribution to the industry, and I believe that the mining industry in total is a major contributor to the South African economy. In our case, we have been investing in South Africa. In the last 10 years, you know, since 1999, we've invested 148 billion rand in various projects and in mines here in South Africa. And we are a large taxpayer. You know, and we don't say the largest, we are one of the largest, because I know my colleagues in Sasol, because they pay a lot of other taxes on the fuels, you know, that they are also a significant contributor. So is the other mining players as well. So we pay 40.3 billion rand into the fiscus, which we paid last year. And I also wanted to highlight the fact that, you know, in terms of export revenues, which is important foreign currency, we generated nearly 105 billion rand worth of export revenues last year. And the important part is because of some of the symbiotic relationships we have here. You know, we always talk about some of the constraints to delivery of mining benefits in South Africa. You know, the issues around power, for instance. Eskom is a major supplier to Anglo-American, and we spent 3.1 billion rand with Eskom last year. But in return, we also delivered 32 million tons of coal to Eskom last year, worth about $630 million or $4.6 billion. And Transnet is quite a major relationship of ours with the value of services worth about $4.1 billion. These two suppliers globally are in the top three in terms of our categories of suppliers. So they are very significant and material, and they have a material impact on our activities. And that's why, you know, efficient logistics and adequate supply of power is important, and it's going to be important for the development of the industry here. And then finally, you know, just to emphasize the fact that we continue to invest in South Africa despite many of the other constraints. Currently, our pipeline of 30 billion rand, you know, is going into completing the Kolomela iron ore project for Sishen South, as we sometimes call it, which is almost 94% complete, and the Zibulo coal mine, which will produce 6.6 million tons, and of course we've got a number of other projects in the platinum business, you know, right across both on the east and the west and the Rustenburg Lake areas of our operation. So that is just a very brief, quick highlight of Anglo-American business here in South Africa as it stands. If I may just take you now, as we move on to the issues of the mining charter, and then just share with you the progress that we're making in respect of that. We are approaching this presentation in exactly the same way as the mining charter does, that we're going to talk to you about all the pillars of the mining charter, and against each pillar, we will reflect, you know, on the progress that we make, that we've made. First off is the ownership and the joint venture. I think before I just delve into that, by way of background, I would like to share and just touch on a couple of points. The fact that the mining charter, as well as our own department, you know, preferred us to do transactions at the asset level. And I make this point because it is very important. We have seen a number of commentators that look at the figures generally only at the stock exchange level, and they seek to then reflect those numbers as representative of ownership in the industry. Actually, in essence, most of the ownership is sitting at the asset level. So that is the first point. The second point is that the method of measurement of ownership, you know, in terms of the mining charter, is different in many respects. Yes, it does include equity. That's one of them. And the other methodology is that it does take into account units of production as well. You know, in other words, what are the tons that are attributed to a BEE player? You know, and you can calculate your ownership in that sense. And you can take a mix of both. You know, so the method of measurement is different. And so with that in mind, what we reflect on this page of ownership is that right across all our businesses, we have achieved the required ownership level of 26% within the thermal coal business, iron ore business, the platinum business, you know, and in fact, we only reflect on here the mining businesses. In the appendices is a list of all the transactions that we've done since 1994. You see that the same sort of philosophy applies in terms of some of the industrial assets that we've since sold, and that we have significant levels of empowerment in there. And secondly, many of our transactions are broad-based. You know, they involve employees as well as communities. And thirdly, as a consequence of the fact that we have achieved the required empowerment credentials, we have received the conversions of our mining rights from old order to new order mineral rights. So those are the points I just wanted to make. There is a number mentioned in the pack that says that we've done transactions cumulatively of $60 billion. $60 billion worth of these transactions across all our businesses since 1994. That number of $60 billion is what the value of the transaction was at the time of the deal, you know, as opposed to what it is worth now, because some of them are worth considerably more. So that is the point on the ownership, and we believe we are responsible, and out of our stable has come major black control mining companies such as Exxaro Resources, for instance, African Rainbow. You know, I'm sure our colleagues from the industry are going to talk about this because we don't claim credit for them. But when that particular business was in our group, you know, this was part of the transaction. You know, your Mvela Panda, Afripam Resources, Shanduka Resources, Anurag, you know, all these organizations have their genesis in our stable. And the other point to make in respect of this, and it's important again, you know, that many of our transactions were vendor funded by our group companies, which means that we as a company, we stepped in the breach and we behaved like a bank in order to support these BE entities. Otherwise, some of the transactions may not have been possible as a result. And just to share with you a couple of transactions on the broad-based side, we have two flagship community share ownership schemes. The one is the Sishen Iron Ore Mine, where the community is they own 3% of Sishen Iron Ore Company. That particular transaction, what we're happy about, although it, in terms of age, it's only about just under five years old, you know, the community stake is already fully paid up from dividends, and currently that stake is worth about 6.3 billion rand, and the distribution so far this year in terms of dividends, which are going to the benefit of 600,000 people, is about 668 million rand. So a very successful structure. We recently announced the Lefalarona project, which is again our community share ownership project within Anglo American Platinum, that covers communities around Twickenham, Mokgalakwena, Rustenburg, Amandelbult, as well as some of the dense labor sending areas as well. Now, this is a 3.5 billion rand again transaction, and what is also interesting here is that although we highlight these two flagship transactions, all our other operations also have community share ownership schemes. And equally, all employees, and the emphasis on all employees who are not on any other share scheme in Anglo American, are on the employee share ownership plan within the group. And again, you know, because this one is coming to maturity, the Kumba one is going to be generating some fairly substantial payouts by the end of this year. If I can hand you over to our head of Transformation and Regulatory Affairs, Zindiwe, and she's going to take us now through most of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Godfrey. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, ladies and gentlemen. I'll take you through the employment equity section first. The original mining charter had two targets in this pillar of employment equity. It was 40% for HTSAs in management and 10% for women in mining. As you can see from the graph, as at the end of 2009, our aggregate HTSA in management representation stood at 52%. That figure includes junior management, and the percentage for women in mining was at 12% in aggregate. The aggregate percentage for HTSAs in management had increased steadily from about 34% in 2005. As at the end of December last year, the employment equity picture in Anglo-American was as follows. Our junior and middle management levels indicate a strong HTSA representation. You will note, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that this is where our future talent is for development into the senior ranks in the organization. Our senior and top management levels are on track with the mining charter targets, and in fact edging towards the 2014 target of 40%. We, however, acknowledge that the work that we need to focus on and are indeed focusing on currently is to ensure equitable representation by race and gender across all the levels. The next slide, which is as at the end of September, which is basically the most up-to-date status we have on employment equity essentially, is a similar picture to the 2010 slides that I've just spoken to. Moving on to human resource development. Basically,
can you, madam, go back to your graphs there?
Yes, sir.
You move a bit quicker. You say the first one, what does it measure?
2009.
Does it measure 2009?
When you say the first one,
the bigger graph, which has got what, four colors?
Okay.
Platinum, thermal coal, kumbaya, and all.
Yes, sir.
Is it measuring 2009?
It's measuring at the end of September.
Yeah.
2011.
Okay.
It's peer management level. From top management, the blue bar, the lady blue bar is on the extreme left.
Yeah.
Is top management. That red bar is senior management.
Okay.
The next one is middle management, and then junior management.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And that is the revised mining charter picture, sir. The split per management level came into effect in September last year.
Good.
Thank you. Just to emphasize, Honorable Chairperson, the target is still 40% per management level. On human resource development, we see human resource development as a tool to achieve employment equity and not as an end in itself. We have various initiatives that reside in this pillar, including EBIT programs, bursary schemes, and financial support for secondary and tertiary institutions. In 2009, there's a typo on our slide, it's 2006, it actually should be 2009, about 6% of payroll in aggregate across our three business units was invested in training and developing our employees. In 2010 alone, more than 800 million rand was spent on various human resource development initiatives, including bursaries, EBIT, and management programs. Each business unit exceeded the 3% of payroll target in their spend on human resource development. You will note on the EBIT graph that the number of EBIT learners is reduced significantly, specifically in 2010. This is due to a couple of factors. The number of our employees needing EBIT training are reducing. Secondly, new entrants into our business are increasingly having a minimum metric as a qualification. Moving on to mine community development. We recognize the importance of contributing to the development of the communities in which we operate and those where our employees come from. Over the four-year period between 2007 and 2011, over 1 billion rand has been spent on various community development initiatives. This slide, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, gives the split between the split per business unit on three key areas, namely education, health, and infrastructure that we are highlighting today. On the next slide, basically, we are providing a breakdown of the initiatives and projects delivered. I should mention, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that these sample projects were spread in at least four provinces, the Northern Cape, Limpopo, Northwest, and Mpumalanga, which, as we indicated earlier in our presentation, are the provinces where the bulk of our operations are. Mr. Gomer will take the committee through the next section on infrastructure.
You say it's Northern Cape, Limpopo,
Northwest, and Mpumalanga.
Northwest.
Chairperson, this is a very good story on enterprise development. What I'd like to share with you is that we have a model which we call the MELE Enterprise Development Initiative, and it is split into four funds, and the fifth one to be launched soon. And within those funds, what we do is we advance loans or equity to SMEs, whether they are either startups or those that we are trying to support on our value chain, right across our value chain, or through our procurement facilities. And many of them, such as the Anglo-American Kula Mining Fund, would never have the opportunity, because we believe that is one of the only funds available that would support exploration expenditure up to bankable feasibility type stage. The key to the success of this model is that there is a back office which we call management services, and we included within all those services to support these entrepreneurs is what I call the core of mentorship programs, to help the entrepreneurs in the end stand on their own, which is what the word Zimele means. To deliver this, we have 32 hubs which are dotted across the country, mostly near where our operations are, and some of them in the labor sending areas, you know, places like Bushbuck Ridge and Mutata. We do have the hubs there. Now, the reflection of the story, and I hope you can see this slide. You know, I said earlier on that the group employs 91,500 people. Those are the people who are employed by the mining business itself. This initiative, outside of our mining jobs, has created or sustained 18,200 jobs to date since 2008. And we have about 1,300 businesses in the stable right across the fund. And they are each generating about all generating in total 1.9 billion rand worth of turnover. And we invested 519 million rand in them. Now, if you rework the numbers, the jobs versus the actual funding, you see that the cost of creating a job is just under 30,000 rand, or 29,000 rand per job. So this is a really efficient way of generating employment in the SME sector. And many of these are areas, as we say, around the mining operations in the poverty north, where the opportunity is not ordinarily be present. And in a further on, we have a specific emphasis where we're focusing on female entrepreneurs. 35% of our entrepreneurs are women, and they're actually the best payers of them. And included in the numbers, 48% is the youth. And what is also interesting about this, is the repayment rate for the loans, is that they're generally around 90%. And this is really a very good and wonderful story, and in terms of the job creation. And this we do outside of our normal mining activities. And For this, we have made a specific commitment to the UN, a call to action, that by 2015 we will have created 25,000 jobs in this particular initiative. So we are on 18,000 jobs now. I think if I can perhaps now at this point hand over to Linda to talk about local procurement. Then,
Good morning, I'm the Chairperson, Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen. If we look at the first graph, this graph really shows how our group BEE procurement has significantly increased from 1.1 billion rand in 2000 to the 23.5 billion rand in 2009. And this was achieved through a number of interventions. So including transformation of our existing suppliers, as well as enterprise development, as well as giving preference to procuring from BEE entities. And it was really nice to see the accord signed yesterday, working on things that Anglo American has really been promoting for the last 10 years. If we look at the next slide, and this slide shows our 2010 BEE spend measuring against the new mining charter targets. The target shown in that graph is the 2014 target, and we're currently achieving the 2010, and we're working actively on interventions of how to achieve the 2014 targets. Anglo-American views the BEE national procurement as important, but as the Honorary Chairperson mentioned, localized procurement around our operations is so important. We see this as a strategic initiative, and last year our CEO signed our global local procurement policy in which Anglo-American publicly declares its commitment to local procurement. Some of those commitments are supplier development, where we're actively developing our suppliers to be able to support us, as well as appropriate payment terms for SMEs, as well as improving, and I say improving because we still have work to do in this area, the accessibility and visibility of our procurement opportunities, such as ring fencing or set-asides. And so we really believe that procurement at the national level, the regional level, and the localized level around our host communities is what can and is making a difference to the social and economic development outside of just the mining area, and is and will continue to grow employment, but at all levels, including women and youth. And I'll hand back to my colleague.
Thanks, Linda. Moving on to housing. The original mining charter required mining houses to establish measures to improve the living conditions of employees. Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, we recognise and acknowledge that if there is one aspect in the mining industry that reflected the face of apartheid South Africa at its worst, it is the living conditions mine workers were subjected to. Anglo-American is committed to the eradication of apartheid-style living arrangements for its employees, and specific action has been taken in this regard. 80% of hostels have been converted into single rooms or bachelor flats. Hostel occupancy has reduced from just under 20,000 in 2004 to about 12,500 in 2010. Over 2 billion rand has been committed by our three businesses towards employee housing initiatives. In 2008, our platinum business entered into an MOU with the National Department of Human Settlements to provide 20,000 houses for employees in Limpopo and Northwest provinces. We will achieve the one person per room occupancy rate by 2014 is required in terms of the mining charter through a combination of hostel conversions and facilitating home ownership by employees. Each of our business units provides employees with allowances and subsidies to enable them to afford quality accommodation that you can see on the pictures that are reflected on the slides. Over to you, Gautrain, beneficiation.
Sorry, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
What you are living there is not what you are living there. Is that the case?
It's exactly the case.
I'd like to make two points on beneficiation. Just camping on this slide, just this page only, with this picture, I think the principal point I wanted to make is that beneficiation is not just about making pots and pans, which is just the generally held view about beneficiation, looking just simply at the downstream, And more often than not, I think there is an area which remains forgotten or we do not seem to acknowledge, but it is actually delivering value, in the mining industry. And this is what I call mining beneficiation, right at the beginning of the processes. This plant that you see in front of you is a jig plant, a fission mine. Where we put in many billions of rands to develop this plant, and what it has done is to convert material which was previously waste and would have been thrown away into 13 million tons of high-grade iron ore for export. And this is bringing in well in excess of 1.5 billion rand worth of foreign currency into South Africa as a consequence. So this is just but one example. And I can show you another example, because this section on beneficiation, from what I understand, Mr. Chairman, there's going to be separate hearings on beneficiation later, so we won't spend too much time on this, but I just want to illustrate a couple more points. If I take you to slide number 39, page 39. Again, just talking about waste material, right in the middle of that slide is this reference to coal, Anglo-thermal coal being a leader in South Africa, looking at new ways of exploiting discard coal for power generation. This is a project which is actually advanced now, where we're going to be taking waste coal, material which has been dumped as thrown away as unsuitable, but it will be used to power up a power station, and that power station will generate 450 megawatts of power, through an independent power producer, and contributing valuable, electricity, which we are short of in this country. So there are many elements of beneficiation, as I say, at the mining level. This is an area that we need to take cognizance of, that it's an area where we can contribute significantly. And then, of course, the rest of the text deals with many of the elements of downstream beneficiation that are popularly known, whether it's we're talking about fuel cells, or we're talking about jewelry, or we're talking about, the steel value chain, for instance. So that is what this section is about, but I believe there will be further presentations on beneficiation in the future. So we're not going to spend more time on this.
We're now on slide 42, honorable members, honorable secretary. Safe and sustainable development is a new pillar introduced by the revised mining charter. At Anglo American, safety is the number one value, and the collaborative efforts of the tripartite alliance approach between unions, government, and the mining industry are key to addressing the safety of workers. Just to share with you a couple of statistics as at 2010 on safety. Fatalities were down over 50% from 2007 and 2010. The lost time injury fatality rate was down by over 50% as well over the same period. Anglo-American Thermal Coal recorded a fatality-free year in 2010. Moving on to the environment section of the same pillar in slide 44, we are committed to addressing key environmental concerns associated with mining activities. On this slide, we highlight some of the initiatives we have put in place to address some of these issues. Moving on to R&D. Anglo American invests heavily on research and development with 250 million rand out of more than 400 million rand spent on research and development being spent in South Africa in 2010. And in this year so far, approximately half of the 722 million rand spent on R&D has been spent in South Africa. Migrant labor. This pillar, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, used to be in the original mining charter, but is not part of the revised mining charter. We wanted to show you our employee representation by nationality on this slide. We strive to ensure that the programs that we have for employees and their dependents and families, for example, what we are currently doing on HIV/AIDS treatment, are also enjoyed by dependents and families of our employees who are outside South Africa. Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that was the mining charter portion of our presentation. The next part talks to the fact that our contributions to various causes and initiatives are not limited to the mining charter. We will quickly take you through a high-level overview of the contributions we have made in various areas. Starting with healthcare. It may not be a well-known fact that Anglo American operates the largest private sector HIV/AIDS treatment program in the world. This has been acknowledged by the United Nations. We encourage all our employees to go for HIV counseling and testing every year. In fact, in 2010, 94% of our total employee complement participated in this initiative. We provide free ARV treatment to our employees. Since 2008, this treatment has been extended to employee dependents and their families. But beyond our approach on managing HIV/AIDS and TB, we have initiated broader wellness initiatives as part of our eye care campaign, which include testing for blood pressure, cholesterol, and so on. This is what we do for our employees. For communities, a number of healthcare facilities have been built or provided. Recently, Minister Aaron Mulazumutwaledi witnessed the handover by Kumba of about 9 Batupili mobile health units in the Northern Cape about this year. For social investment, our total CSI spend in South Africa for 2010 was approximately 482 million rand. 73% of this amount went towards our social and labor plan commitments in our host community. Each business unit contributed over 1% of net operating profit after tax towards CSI initiatives in 2010. And finally, on capacity building, we have also been involved in a number of capacity building initiatives. We recently entered into an MOU with the DBSA, Development Bank of Southern Africa, to strengthen the capacity of municipalities in the areas where we operate. The Platinum Eastern Limb Bulk Water Supply Project will provide 1.9 million people with access to clean water through the Libulelo Water Scheme, Flekbushilo, and the Warp Dam construction works. Our Emalahleni water treatment plant purifies 25 megaliters of water from mining operations and produces potable water, which is supplied to the municipality, meeting 20% of its daily requirements. A byproduct of the water treatment process is gypsum. As opposed to it being a waste material, it is used as a raw material to make bricks for construction of houses. Our science career guidance Information and Communication Technology Resources Center is a 19 million rand facility in Emalahleni in Mpumalanga, which provides interactive science, K-12 career guidance and ICT resource facilities for educators and learners throughout the Nkangala district. I will hand over to Godfrey to close. Thank you.
Chairman and members of the portfolio committee on mining, we thank you for listening to our presentation. Obviously, this is a very high level snapshot and the view of the progress that we have made on transformation in South Africa. However, we are aware that you may have specific questions that you may wish to ask of us. You know, myself and the members of my team will be happy to answer any questions that you may have, and if we do not have the answers, we'll be happy to write back to the committee with some of the answers. Thank you.
Thank you very much to the presenters. It's quite an elaborate presentation. The only disadvantage is that we got this document today. That's why you will find that whilst you are giving us the presentation, we would ask questions for clarity immediately on the spot. But nevertheless, the presentation is before us. What you have not done for us that we have requested is to speak to the initiatives for job creation. Neither have you been able, if it's included in here, to quantify the jobs that are created as a result of your, for instance, your social investments, your enterprise development, so that we can have that picture. Remember, we were saying that part of what we're trying to address here are the triple evils, you know, the high level of unemployment, the unacceptably high level of poverty, as well as the whole question of inequality that the country finds itself in, having been declared as the world's most unequal society in North South Africa. So you have not, maybe we have overlooked what you have presented, but I have not come across that aspect, so that we can understand what are the efforts that you are putting in place in assisting us in job creation. Thank you. Just asking this so that we can then open the discussions.
Yes.
But I just want this aspect, which I haven't had you alluding to in your presentation.
Chairman, thank you for that valuable question. I think I have a three-part comment to your observation. The first one is the Anglo-American Female Initiative, which I mentioned. That is a job creation initiative, and it's on page 26 of our presentation. That is a specific job creation initiative which is outside of our normal mining activities. And that particular initiative is created and sustained 18,267 jobs. That is the first point. The second point is that from our core mining activities, the project pipeline, which I referred to, now, so I talked about the investment dollar of some 30 billion rand. You know, actually, that pipeline of projects is going to generate 19,800 jobs. And then finally, you know, and now I'm simply just talking to one aspect of the broader social sphere. Through our various CSI projects, which we either manage through what we call the Chairman's Fund, we have an additional 3,000 jobs in that. The only thing we haven't quantified for you is perhaps what you might be sitting in the social and labor plan. And that is an area that we would address. And we've recognized the fact that, you know, traditionally we've assumed that this is work that we have to do, this is investments we have to do, but I think it would be important to collect that information so that we can reflect the impacts. We tend to measure the social impacts in terms of the number of people who are impacted by the spend, in terms of the number of children who are being impacted and that sort of thing. So we're not, especially on social spend, concerned ourselves with the job side. But I think in terms of the current imperatives, it's important to gather that information, you know. But in the coal mining areas, as well as the separate metamodal, as well as the straight CSI, you know, all in total, this will be just under 40,000 jobs.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, you have the presentation from Anglo-America. Any takers? Honorable Charlie, Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Lucas, Honorable Tindo, Honorable Vigani, Honorable Soldo, Honorable Kolulu, in that order, please. Over to you, Honorable Charlie.
Talk about the investing to the community. What are we talking about if Congress tells us to talk about investing in the community, and who is the community?
If you can please note this question so that you can respond after everybody has spoken. Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm impressed by the list of ownership and joint ventures. It runs 4 pages and values are indicated. And then on page 13, the employee share ownership. They seem to indicate BEE on 2 different fronts. The employee share ownership, a broader employment reach. I see, and you know, as much as I'm impressed by the one page you have there on Kumba, I would personally have seen, would like to have seen more employee share ownership schemes or programs, because that, in my view, is comes very close to broad-based empowerment. Is there anything inherent in the regulations, legislation, community, and or departmental regulations that prohibits or prevents or makes it more easier or difficult to ensure ESOPs? Because that, in my view, is a step closer to broad-based empowerment. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Honorable Lucas.
Thanks for the presentation. I think it's important to share. When you share, you gain knowledge and you know something you don't. So I'm very pleased that we've come to this stage. What is the major concern in the mining industry has been sustainability. You go in, you take out, and you leave a ghost town. For example, Freyhead. Frey was mining coal. When they stopped, it's pathetic at the moment. So I'm thinking, and this happens all over, we need to see, find a way of what we can do, how we can make it possible that after taking out, because the asset is depleting, what can we do about it? This is concerning. The other issue was beneficiation. I think we understand it from different levels. Yes, you'll do beneficiation, but we think beneficiation to at the end, the product that is come out. Instead of taking our gold and sending it to Italy and then repurchasing it as rings and jewelry, we say that should be done locally. That's where I think the confusion comes with beneficiation. We do acknowledge that mining houses do beneficiation to a certain extent. And the other thing I see when you spoke about the healthcare, the emphasis was HIV and AIDS. There was nothing about tuberculosis. Because I think this is a fact, it is there. And I think we should look at it. And I'm not sure why you'll have left that up. And the chairperson has spoken about the yes, I think that's my point. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thanks, maybe mine is a comment and a question later. You know, when we go out to these mining companies and communities, the situation is totally different from what the picture we are giving now. As far as unemployment and youth in particular. You know, when we went to Limpopo, the situation was very bad because we were even nearly assaulted by the community because they had high expectations. But we left without any very good answers. And also, on your slide 19, you're saying ABET has gone, ABET learners have gone down. And maybe is it a requirement that the people that you employ must have matric? Because it's still a battle for people to acquire matric also. But if you insist that people must have matric before you employ them, maybe that is also going to contribute to unemployment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bigani.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got several questions. So, or perhaps I might also be commenting as well. On page 5, or slide 5, in terms of your simplified structure, I'm noticing that one of the companies there, being the BS, has a specific quota there. What does that mean? The B shares. Of 45% under the BS. What makes it different from the rest of them? And with the knowledge that the BS seems to be pulling out of the country, what commitments still remains within you in terms of responsibilities towards the South African government? Then on slide. Basically, on slide 8, I'm looking at what you are giving as a report in terms of the number of people, possible employment that you can give. What percentage of these people are South African? And what percentage is at management level? What percentage is at lower management level and ordinary laborers? If you just give a picture of that. Because I think at the end of the day, in as much as the picture has been painted as to who's where, in terms of women or in terms of the employment equity statistics, we still don't have a picture of exactly how many of those people are South African and where is there a difference or an improvement that shows that at least those who are at lower management level are being upgraded or they are moving upwards. And one straightforward question I'd like to ask, are you one of those who are looting from government companies, who are looting highly qualified or newly qualified engineers and so on, because you are able to pay them better salaries? And if that is so, out of innocence, I suppose, how much is one person perhaps getting, just to give us a picture as to why the looting? The other question, Chair, on slide 15, perhaps 16 as well.
They are looting or they are poaching?
They are poaching. you know, let's leave it. Okay, Chair. And then on page slide 15 and possibly 16, we get a sense of what's happening for women in mining, and perhaps there is an improvement or a gradual improvement in terms of percentages. But my interest is how many of these women, especially at lower management, because you've indicated to us that in terms of human resource development, you have them training in ABET and so on, and perhaps being upgraded. How many of these are directly South African black women? It could be an indication of a more or less percentage, it's fine. Are actually able to eventually become self-sufficient in terms of benefiting from the company. And these that are occupying management positions, if we can get an indication of what level are they operating at within those management positions, because it's still a fact that we are actually facing a lot of men in front of us here, and possibly lesser women, and the positions do differ. The one is better than the other one. We want these top women, why the top management structure, to get an indication how many of them are there. In relation to human resource development, are you able to give us an indication? I see that you give bursaries, but there's a tendency that you don't really get an indication as to where do these people end up in terms of employment. And where do they end up in terms of when they finish with the bursary to get employment? Is it yourself that employs them again, or do you send them elsewhere, or must they see for themselves? Because then there'll be an issue of having to perhaps pay back a loan bursary, for example. Then in relation to slide 23, which also covers, I think, towards the back, the issues of health. In most instances, you find that the health services are government services. They are free services anyway. I'd like to get an indication that the health services that you've shown us here, are these solely funded by yourself directly, or are you dependent on communicating with the department, government department, to have those services supplied to health services given to those people? Honorable Lucas has already covered me in terms of the different diseases. You are also prioritizing the HIV and AIDS program, which also in government, if you give them ARVs, you give them ARVs for free. Are these your own ARVs in terms of funding, because there's a difference in terms of the money that comes out to ensure that these people get those health services? And how do you then prioritize your health services in terms of possible diseases that you could get related to complications because of mining? The TB that has been mentioned, the silicosis and whatever else, depending on, because there's no indication given as to where do your highest statistics fall in terms of health hazards that you might experience within your own mind. The other question, the pictures are beautiful. They are clean, well off to do children there, the housing. It's beautiful, it's impressive. But as already indicated, when you get down there, it's not the same picture that you get. There's a lot of unemployment. There's housing complications. These people, when they get laid off, what do they benefit out of Anglo America? What is theirs to say, out of my hard work, when I go on pension, this is what I benefit? Just an example, a simple example of one employee would do to give an indication that there is an improvement of life from where they've started, possibly at groundwork in the mine, to become something better. Because all we see is poverty. And are all the living standards the same as the picture you've painted here? Or does it depend on your salary level within Anglo America? And if there are areas that you haven't reached in terms of improved housing or living standards around your mining areas, can you give us examples of those areas? Those are the areas we want to know. What are you doing about them? Chairperson, I think let me pause there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sondo.
failed as other comrades and members have done. But Jefferson, I want to be consistent in the question that I'm going to be asking. The core questions relate to sustainable transformation, job creation, skill development, and gender equity. That's where we are working. We are 17 years, if I can count, into democracy, and we are still busy grappling with economic emancipation and pivotal in that is this industry that is before us now. Anglo is one of the largest diversified mining and natural resources groups, and therefore from Anglo we are looking for answers into our economic situation. It is because of this economy that South Africa is regarded as the most unequal society in the world. And therefore, because mining is the principal contributor to job creation and to the fiscal of the country, when are we getting back on all these principal aspects that were mentioned by other members and by ourselves? I'm asking this question primarily because there are suspicions taking ground, rumors also taking ground, that some big mining companies are busy beginning to disinvest. Is there a degree of unpatriotism? And I'm keeping this for every mining company, because we need to be speaking things turning around. Secondly, if say for instance, I'm looking at one slide 45 on your sustainable development, research and development. Are you producing the scarce and requisite skills, or are you coaching? If we are coaching and you are not producing these skills as companies, what are we doing? Are we recycling these skills instead of producing them? I think I'm asking these questions, Chairperson, with an intention of making or of seeing mining companies changing the face look of our economy and of that of our society. What is your take on that? When are we getting there? Members have already said that what is contained in the paper is so glossy than what you see on the ground. Yes, you need to be attributed by some of the achievements that you have. You have achievements. We've seen them on the ground. But Mama, when are we getting there? What do you think is the problem that makes it so difficult for us to get there, where we want to be? Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you, Honourable Bilan. You seem to have forgotten one point. We're coming to you, Honourable.
Sorry, Chairperson. The slide, page 62 or so. the ownership and joint ventures. I'm noticing something there about Anglo-Indian Seacoast. Under key partners, there's something that says the women's development there. Can you give us an indication of what's going on there, because there's also a community trust issue that is being done. Can you give us an indication on what's going on there and how is it benefiting women? Then for some reason or the other, on page 62, or slide 62, there's also an issue about the Beers. In fact, the Beers, Conlock, Boskendall, there's figures that are shown there in terms of value of transaction dates, but the rest of the columns are empty there. What does that mean? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me join my colleagues also and thank the presentation from Anglo-American. I want to make a few comments and maybe a few questions as well. Firstly, I want to commend Anglo-American on the ownership and JV of reaching the 26% target that is indicated in the presentation in the various business units. And also maybe commend them on the current community shareholding, which they say it's estimated to be worth 6.3 billion rand, which most of it goes to development projects. I just wanted to check on that one, actually. I'm commending, but I want to also get more details on that one. I just want to get the sense of those projects, actually, as to what are they. If maybe they can just give me a what to call it. And then the second point, Chair, is on the slide, page 13 of the presentation. It's quite interesting there, you know, if you look at that slide, where they're talking about 500,000, that's half a million rands, that is said to be given to about 5,000 employees. I just want to check those employees, from which category are they? Because all in all, Anglo-American, I know, you employ something like 90-something thousand. So there's about 5,000 of them, actually, that are going to be getting 500,000, half a million rand, which is very good. Yeah. Now, the other one, on the local procurement, actually, I see that really you are empowering these BEEs. I just wanted to get a sense of the kind of procurement that you're giving to them, actually. Is it not these smaller Yana ones of cleaning of the, what to call, and the supply of, is it the real empowerment whereby you give them to go out there and get us this kind of equipment for the mines and all that? I just want to get a sense of that one. And then, of course, on the housing one, Chair, I see that you were subsidizing these employees from 1,000 rand up to 7,000 rand. Of course, it depends how much you earn within the company. Now, my question on that one is, for instance, if you have these workers, they stay within the precinct of the mine, isn't it? That's where you build these houses and all that. What happens, for instance, in an event whereby somebody loses his job, or maybe by accident he can no longer work? Do you chuck that person out of that house? What happens after that, actually? I just wanted to get a sense of what happens on that one. That was on the housing one. And then, of course, lastly, Chair, on the social investment, I see that you really contribute towards the welfare of the communities around your area of operations there. Do you stretch your hand, to reach out to those who are not falling within your
area of operations. How do you do that? You know, we want to come also and knock at your doors. You know, we're not from within your areas, we're from very far away. We have communities who are struggling. So I just wanted to check on your social investment if you also reach out to those communities that are far away from the area of your operation. Lastly, Chair, it's about the employment equity. I've seen your, what you call your report on that one, but I don't see anything on the physically challenged people, whether you do you have any of them, do you have space for them to employ within your what you call. Thank you very much, Chair, for your indulgence.
Thank you very much. It's quite a number of questions, but I think in the interest of time, we must give you all the questions so that you respond once. And we then release you because there are quite a number of other people after you. My few questions are that we see the level of investment you are making in the country, 148 billion pounds. But the question would be, where is your primary listing? Is it in the JSE? Is it in New York? Is it elsewhere? Just to have a feel, we see that, well, of course, Anglo-American, indeed, that the name itself tells us that it's mostly foreign-owned. Now, the second question on page 8 is these pipeline projects. For instance, in iron ore, you're saying that the project is at 94% completion. Now, in quarter 3 of 2011, where is it now? Because we're already in quarter 4 now. Is it complete? And you were saying that all these pipeline projects would create somewhat 19,000 jobs. Are you able to give us jobs that have been created so far? Because even on thermal coal, you are saying that the production is expected at quarter 4 of 2012. Does it mean this project has not yet been implemented or it's still in the pipeline as the term says? Or in the platinum area, in terms of the projects that you are enumerating there, the Tembelani, Mogalakwena. The last time we visited some of your areas, your operations, there was a problem, challenges of community matters in Mogalakwena. How far is that? Have you been able to resolve those problems, or are they still there? Because it's an issue that we have undertaken to make a follow-up on when we see yourselves. On slide 11, in terms of your ownership and joint ventures, indeed, colleagues have already indicated progress that you are making. But the question is, how sustainable are these BEs that you have dealt with, that you have supported? And what represent these percentages? Is it the 26% unencumbered ownership, or is it the 26% incumbent, you know, ownership? Because for us, meaningful transformation and meaningful participation would also talk to what level of debt are these BEE people, you know, exposed to. So therefore, if you could clarify to us, you know, that. And then the question of sustainability, because I understand in one of your operations, I don't know if it was Kumba or it was thermal coal, where you had Vela Panda, the Vela resources that were part of your that stable, which has since folded. That's why we were posing this question of sustainability of these BEs, because it's one thing to create and establish these BEs. It's another thing to sustain them. It's another thing when they would go, under. And indeed, you know, the meaningfulness of this participation. You can be 30%, you can be 40% by 2014, because these figures are our minimum requirements in terms of the charter. But then what does that mean? Does it, you know, give people wealth as it is expected? Are they in a position to participate fully? Now, on slide 13, the question that was asked by one honorable member here, this figure of 500,000 per person in Kumba, I don't know what is the total number of employees involved. It sounds too good, I must say. 500,000 each individual, which is not the final payment, because I understand this SOP is based on the life of the mine. Now, how much does it come to in terms of the dividend? Is this 500,000 a net, or is this 500,000 a gross, and what, you know, deductions will be affected out of that? So why we're saying it's too good to be true is because it's the first of its kind. And indeed, if it goes to what you are saying here, which has been independently confirmed by your labor unions, it's quite an achievement, which must be applauded. And it's an example that should be replicated elsewhere in the mining industry. But you know, sometimes you get people who are in this deal, in these arrangements, in these schemes, ESOPs, and BEs. One member here, whose name I'm not going to mention, received at one stage a dividend of what? 4 rand? 8 rand? For the whole year. And that was a dividend. The company concerned would say, yes, we have paid dividends. 8 rand for the whole year. What is that, if it's not an insult? Now, if you look at this figure that you are brandishing here, 500,000 is 500,000. And indeed, we need to know whether this is a net figure that you are giving. We see that when it comes to women in mining, indeed, you are making a progress. You are making a progress, and especially impressed about the leadership positions that you give to your women. And it's reflected in your delegation as well. And I think it's something that we would need to applaud you on. The question, though, remains, are these people, not only women alone, are these people, when they are promoted to these positions, for instance, in senior management, in top management, are they given the corresponding powers that go with that particular position? Because in the main, you have tokens. And I think here we need to speak openly and clearly to you. You have people who simply whose responsibility is to interface with government. And that's their main responsibility when it comes to decision-making in serious areas. They are found wanting, even though they carry the title of being an executive director, executive manager, or whatever, you know, title you give to those people, but the fact of the matter would be that somebody else takes real decisions, as opposed to the very people that should take those decisions. So we would want your confirmation on that. And indeed, the role you're playing in the community is also noted. Now, on your procurement, I think the question has been posed already. Where are these procurement? Where is this procurement? Is it on capital goods? Is it on consumables? Because the honorable member is correct. Sometimes you will show very big figures, but then those procurements will mainly reside on consumables. And indeed, the question that will be posed on how many jobs were created as a result, because these are quite big figures in terms of the of procurement spend that you have reflected in here. On your housing, you're looking at the occupancy of one person per room by 2014. Very good. But then these houses that you have built, except the hostels that you have converted, what is the ownership arrangement by employees on these houses? And at what cost are they? Because it's one thing to build beautiful houses. We've seen them when we were in your Kumba Iron or Sishen mine. Very beautiful houses, but then, you know, the complaints from your employees was that they are the purchase price of these houses is so high that they get tied into long-term bonds. You know, so we would need to then be informed in terms of the cost of these houses. After all, I think you have already mentioned that beneficiation, you will deal with it at some other time, so we will reserve questions of beneficiation. Though we must say this, that just glossing over your presentation, it seems that you are basically doing quite well in that field. Just one area on your social investment, where you deal with health matters, the examination of your employees and their families, do you also, in the instance of HIV/AIDS, provide antiretroviral you know, treatment to employees and to their families, to their family members? And who carries that cost? Is it jointly with government, or are you doing it on your own? Please, if you could, if you care to respond to all those questions, don't be surprised when we ask you, you know, follow-up questions, and especially on the BEs. There's this system or program that you are involved in, which is called Alchemy. Now, we came across this, but the persons we had this from, they could not tell us what exactly this is. And we then said, no, Anglo-American is coming, and therefore we would then ask them this Alchemy project. What does it mean? How does it work? Thank you very much. Respond to those.
Thank you, Chairman. Colleagues, we counted, we want to about question number 32. And many of the issues that you've raised is, in essence, I would say, is the essence and the substance of our presentation. And it is also the essence and the substance of the things that we're faced with in our organization and the things that we're trying to deliver on. And we will try and summarize very quickly, you know, and go through the points that have been raised. We'll try and combine, because some of the questions are reflecting on the same issue. If I may ask Yvonne and Musa, can you colleagues just prepare on all the questions on the community as well as Christina? And then employment equity, and then you can think about procurement one. And I'll just try and cover some of the other more broader, general questions. I think the principal issue that was raised around investment and commitment to South Africa, and I think that touches on the Honourable Member's question on De Beers, there's nothing different. You know, I think this is just a class of shares that confers different benefits to the different shareholders within De Beers. That's your reference to the B class shares. But there is no question of our commitment to all the investments that we have here in South Africa. You know, I mentioned that, in fact, 2 years ago, we made the announcement that our core commodities will be diamonds, thermal coal, manganese, and platinum. All the commodities that we're dealing with here are the commodities we're committed to. So we will continue to invest in that area. The 30 billion rand we talked about, which is in current investment, Chairman, you raised, I think, one point, particularly around the one investment decision, to say it is 94% complete. What we in essence are doing is we are in hot commissioning of that project, you know, and it will take time to ramp up so it will get to full production by 2012. Bear in mind that, you know, what might be ready on our side does not necessarily reflect on the fact that maybe the logistics side is also ready. So there are many other parts that need to be ready, you know, but our section is 94% complete and we're hot commissioning at the moment. So in respect of our commitment here, I think the level of spend and expenditure that we refer to, that 30 billion is South African spend. The 148 billion for the last 10 years was South African spend. So that is the situation. The question on where are we, where is our listing? The primary listing is in London, and the secondary listing is Johannesburg. We make the point that as a consequence of that primary listing in 1999, the share register changed. What happened was the local investors sold their shares, and many of the local investors are sitting at 34% of this register currently. And the balance of the register is externally owned. But consequent to that, there was a very substantial inflow of money that came into South Africa because of that change in the register. Some 124 billion rand actually was a capital inflow consequent to the shift in the share register. So I just need to try and cover all the question on. I like the question on health. You know, when we talk HIV/AIDS only, we're not just referring to HIV/AIDS, because the manifestations that you see that are consequence of the disease, they manifest in TB and other related diseases. So when we say we then treat our employees, we are referring to it's a holistic approach to wellness, as opposed to simply saying, well, because you can't separate, effectively and say it's just simply HIV/AIDS, because the other issues such as TB and all that, they manifest consequence to the immune deficiency. So we are covering all those aspects as part of our. And it is correct, Chair, that we actually, the treatment is to our own employees and their families. And we have some community projects that we have, such as the Bubesi clinic that we refer to here, you know, which is in the East, which is a project co-funded by ourselves, the Virgin Atlantic, and others, where we are doing specific community work in that region, supporting, just dealing with the scourge of HIV/AIDS. So the sort of examples that we gave were just simply snapshots at a high level. And I'm actually delighted. I think the question was, well, you know, all these glossy pictures, you know, I mean, what is the story? Is it all wonderful? You know, and our own response to that is simply to say, Chairman, if there is an opportunity that the portfolio committee would like us to do a show and tell, and then you visit, so we can show you what is on the ground. Because it is the only way we can demonstrate and prove to you the things that we're telling you tonight, today. There is no point in us coming here and presenting positions that are not on the ground. So that is the only way we can respond to that particular question, Chair. The ownership issue, and then if I can just take that broadly, the ESOPs, the question was asked on ESOPs is, how far have we gone with that? Because we gave one specific example in here. But what we're saying is that every one of our companies has ESOPs. Every one of our companies have ESOPs. So it is not just limited to Kumba only. So it is the model that is used in terms of broad-basing the ownership of the organization. Secondly, if the honorable member doesn't mind, can we leave the De Beers question, because De Beers are going to talk about their ownership structures when they make a presentation. So I wouldn't like to steal their thunder. They just happen to be a sister organization of ours. The third element relating to ownership, and I think that was the core question on funding arrangements and what is where is the gearing and things like that. Now, the reason why we made the point that many of the BEE transactions are vendor funded by ourselves, that means we as a company, instead of the bank, funded those transactions. That is in recognition of the fact that if there are sustainability issues in future, we can always make or rearrange that funding transaction in order to make the structure sustainable. It is already a major commitment for the company to sell some of its own equity and for it to provide the funding that is necessary in order to support the transaction. So I think it's a laudable position because generally it may not be possible for those BEE players to obtain external funding from the banks and that sort of thing. So in a way, already the company is saying this is our way of showing that the transaction will be sustainable by providing the actual necessary funding. Because the company has sold, but actually it has not been paid, but it's saying you owe me, you just leave it as a debt, you know. So I think it's a very important point to look at, particularly in the entire industry, where the organizations have, out of their own accord, provided the what we call the vendor funding. We have many of the organizations we've reflected in here have not come back to us and asked for additional funding, and that is a testament to their sustainability. We have the flagships like your Exaro, your Shandukas have moved on, your African Rainbows have moved on, and many others. However, what we have done, you know, and I can give an example because it was in the media recently, we're an organization, and it's an important part of the relationship. We are always happy to support and assist and to find ways of ensuring that the transaction is sustainable, such as we have done with ANORAD before. You know, so there is a commitment to ensure that our PE partners are successful.
Just on that, are the funding arrangements based on the flow-through principle? In other words, within the period of the loan and the repayment arrangements, are there some dividends that are flowing through to the BEE partners? Because in the past, this has been a serious problem where people would be. That's why, for instance, your ventures such as Envela have gone under.
Yeah. Chairman, the Envela, I don't think they are still around and they are simply unbundling their businesses. This is our understanding. The issue of trickle dividends does come in terms of the new mining charter, and certainly many of the transactions we've done post the new mining charter have trickle dividends in the structures. But however, as a principle, many of the structures that we did in this in our own arrangements had trickle dividends, particularly the ones that we've done in the last 5 years. There is a way, some form of supporting the BEE. We did recognize that. I think I've covered all the sort of the broad ownership questions, if I may. There was a point on training and development, and I have the young man here with one of our graduate trainees. He's in his 3rd year, and I would like him to talk for himself at some point if we still have time so that we can, you know, this is part of our show and tell. I think I've covered all the general questions. I will come back to you if I miss something. I think the big issue is around the community and some of the general ownership teams. If you want, and Musa, you can just support our discussion.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to be responding to questions specifically directed to Kumba. The first question was around the Community Development Trust. The shareholding that the Community Trust, the 3% shareholding that the Community Trust has in Fission Iron Ore Company, has done a whole lot of projects at the moment, ranging from health, education on early childhood development projects, laboratories, libraries, and some math and science interventions. There's a project that was also approved not long ago, about a month ago, on ostrich farming in the Northern Cape, which is going to create about 850 jobs. And there are other farming projects that we're looking at around goats, and just to make sure that it's projects that will keep the communities going and will also be able to create jobs and bring some income as well. Bakeries have also been established for co-ops, a group of women, group of youth, and those kind of things. Around sustainability of the project as well in our CSI interventions, we always ensure that we do the projects that we get involved in are projects that we do in partnership with the relevant government department and the municipalities, to ensure that even beyond, you know, all body depletion, those projects will still be within and will still be able to sustain and taken care of by the municipalities or the relevant government. And also to make sure that the projects that we're doing are actually projects that are in the municipal IGPs and not projects that we just feel we have to do. So there's that partnership and that acknowledgement that we shouldn't be doing things to please ourselves, but to please the bigger communities. On Envision, that was the other Kumba-specific question. The 500,000 is indeed real, depending on what the share price will be on the day when on the final day of the scheme, and that's the 17th of November. What's happening today is we have an AGM where our shareholders are actually voting as we speak that the payment should go ahead, and the 17th of November will be when we know the exact amount. So it depends on what the share price is. When we calculated the 500,000, I think the share price was standing at about 470 rand on that day. So firstly, it will depend on the share price, and also it's a net value. So the employees have to pay tax. So what we have been doing in the past month is also to educate employees on financial responsibilities, and also on share on the fact that they're going to now be on a different tax bracket, and that their gains will be taxed. Thanks, Chair.
How many employees, if you may ask?
About 6,000. We are at about 5,800, to be exact. And it's all employees who are not on the normal share incentive schemes that is afforded to management. So it's everybody who's not in that management structure.
They say the devil is in the teaching. You see now, the book says half a million each. That's in the face value of the information received there. Now there's a but, which means that this whole thing needs to be unchecked. Otherwise, we will go out here thinking that each employee is going to get half a million. And how many are there? But the details says now 10.
Yeah. I think, Chairman, every citizen has to pay tax. The distribution that we refer to, and then as my colleague said, you make a calculation at a point in time. And if the share price is going to be exactly 4% on that day, it will be $500,000 less in tax. So they will get a net amount. The other thing is that this scheme for the 5,800 employees is an egalitarian scheme. It doesn't recognize salary grants, so it divides by the number of employees, the total pot of money divided by the number, total number of employees. And the only adjustment you make is for the number of years in service. So if you've been in there for less than 5 years, then you get, let's say if you've been there for 1 or 5 years, you get 1/6 share. But if you've been there for 5 out of 5, then you get the full distribution. That is the third part of the distribution. But it is much the same way as anybody else. If they say how much do you earn, they tell you your gross number before tax. And that is why we quoting that number. 5,800. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
My question there was, who is the community? Because generally they are addressing the community. But who is the community here? Is it a group of men and women who decided to call themselves a community? Or is it in Luna on behalf of the people of that village? Who is the community now that is in charge of the university?
Okay. Can you put your thing up here? This one?
Thank you, Godfrey. Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Honorable Charlie, the community as we defined it in the mining is what we call mine community, mine host community. And this is a community or a combination of communities that are within the immediate proximity of a mine. And so, for instance, in the platinum world, in the Anglo-American platinum world, the sphere of influence that defines the communities within which we invest takes a 50-kilometer radius around our operating mines. And so, those then become our integrated community development framework within which we invest for the communities to get better, to improve their lives. And in that space, for example, we invest, we have a number of programs. One program that we have as an example is the traditional leadership development programs, because in some of those communities we have traditional leaders. But we also have municipal capacity building programs in partnership with the Development Bank of South Africa and SALGA. You know, the in the procurement, the enterprise development and procurement, what we call local procurement is within the 50-kilometer radius, and we then quantify the volumes of activity within the 50-kilometer radius. The SLP, Social and Labor Plan Investment, forms part of our integrated community development framework, and we also have additional infrastructure in road construction, for example, water treatment facilities, among other examples of infrastructure investments that we make. Perhaps while I have the floor, I may just continue with the broad-based ownership. We have ESOPs, BEE entrepreneurs, and communities. And it is within the community ownership that we have Project Alchemy. And so Project Alchemy is it's a 3.5 billion rand broad-based economic empowerment, ownership transactions for the communities in the four main mines, that mine areas that we have. And these are the communities of Twickenham, Mogalakwena, Rustenburg, Amanda Belt, as well as dense labor sending areas. And so this transaction will cover all of those host communities as well as major labor sending areas. What Project Alchemy really is, it is a community share scheme. And so we are at the advanced stage of consultation with the beneficiary communities. As of last week, we held roadshows across all the beneficiary communities and engaged with these communities about Project Alchemy. And we think we are making good progress towards finalization of and implementation of Project Alchemy during the course of this year. The last one I wanted to cover in the question is the Mogalakwena issue, Honorable Chair, that you raised. Yes, indeed, the area of Mogalakwena was characterized by very tense relations between ourselves and that particular community. We believe in the partner of choice with all our host communities and indeed our government. And we have been working tirelessly to improve our relationship with Mogalakwena. We are not anywhere close to where we wish to be, Honorable Chair, but we have made significant progress towards building relations with our Mogalakwena community, with the assistance of the Department of Mineral Resources. The Minister established a government-facilitated task scheme. In that government-facilitated task scheme, it is chaired by the Department of Mineral Resources and community representatives, about 20 of them sit in the task scheme, and of course Anglo-American Platinum representatives. And there is a basket of issues that we are still addressing. But I am confident, Honorable Chair, with the progress that we are making. And in fact, we have a meeting of the government-facilitated task team sometime next week as part of the continuum of building relations, improving relations with the Mogalakwena community. We will report back to you on that, on the progress we are making on ensuring that all the issues that were identified are indeed addressed and that we can live harmoniously as neighbors as we grow our business in that environment. Thank you very much.
So, when you say you are going to invest in a community aid, do you take this money to a this investment to a community, for lack of a better word, to a community or to a traditional leader?
I understand. Babumjali, we recognize all the community-based structures. Traditional leaders have a particular role that they play in communities. And so it is obviously in our interest that where there are traditional leaders, they are not in all the areas where we operate. But where they exist, they are recognized as legitimate community-based leadership structure. And so we work with them very closely, and in fact, in the rollout of Project Alchemy, they are among the key community-based leadership structure that we have engaged with, and we have garnered a lot of support from the traditional leaders. And then, of course, the other structures of government, the local municipality, where it interfaces with our sphere of influence and falls within the community, the host community as we define it, they are our key stakeholder, and we engage with them as well. So all community-based structures, including traditional leaders, are indeed engaged in our community programs, and they are identified as key stakeholders that we engage with when we roll out our community investment programs.
Let me ask you to respond further to any other questions outstanding. Time is against us.
Chair, if I may come in on the employment equity side. Honourable members, just to give you a breakdown, at our top management level, we have 4 African females, that's 2 each in our listed business units, that is Kumba Iron Ore and Anglo American Platinum. We have 1 Indian female at that level as well, 2 African males, 1 Indian male, and 6 foreign national males at top management. 6. That's at the top management level. The senior management level has 27 African females, 8 colored females, 10 Indian females, 112 African males, 16 colored males, and 41 Indian males. We have 168 people with disabilities, 14 of them are females, and 154 are males. I think there was another question regarding the total employee, the skilled and unskilled. Right. The total foreign national employee complement is 6,255. That is across all the bands, from the top to basically contractors less than 3 months in the organization. And then we have exactly 6,000 out of 91,000. That's that total number that we gave you. African females altogether account for just over 7,000. That includes our skilled, semi-skilled, and unskilled employees over and above the management levels as well. So the total employee pool of African females is 7,059. African. No, African as they're South African. They're South African, yes. We account for foreign nationals specifically. So African females is that number. Colored females, the total number is 339. The total number of Indian females is 117. Total number of white females is 1,846. Total number of African males is 45,379. Total number of colored males is 1,289. Total number of Indian males is 195. Total number of white males is 6,758. And then I've given you the total foreign national component. Of that 6,265 total of foreign nationals, 64 of those are females, and then the rest are males. That is on government equity.
Shall we ask, because that information is very important for our own assessment, that you put it together and send it to the committee secretary?
I can respond very briefly on the procurement items.
Certainly when you ask what do we procure, it's a wide range to reach the, you know, over 20 billion spend. It includes from mining, you know, large service companies, mining services companies. Certainly when you're looking at the big spend areas, that includes your Barlow World Logistics, includes your, you know, African Explosives to get those high numbers at BEE. When you're looking more at your SMEs, that's when people always ask, are we only giving the guarding services and the security services and the cleanings to them? We need to ensure that all of that at least goes to those people as part of the employment. But we also do a lot. There's a company, Bird Equipment, which manufactures in South Africa. We procure from them. They also export. We're also looking at a lot of the construction, where we upskill people in the construction. We have some of our larger companies providing that skills. Repairs is an area that we do at the moment and growing in, because, again, they're learning artisanal skills. Welding, so one of the pictures you saw there was how to weld bucks and bowls. We have a very good one in Sishen and Platinum, where we do the maintenance of the bucks and bowls through local suppliers. And a key area we're looking at is what we call unbundling. So how can you take some of your stuff and you might procure some of it, but then maintain it, assemble it, repair it closer to the local community. So we have a lot more to do in this area. We are consciously looking at how can we improve it, how can we unbundle, restructure our different contracts so that we can increase it. And yeah, that probably gives an overview of it. And it also comes to, you know, the communities, making sure that our investment, our procurement spend, we use strategically and look at how we can up the community, you know, upskill the communities that way. Oh, sorry, just one thing that we are failing to do ourselves, which we need to do, is we don't count the number of jobs that we're creating through our suppliers. And that's a large number. And it's something that we need to actively start recording, managing, because what you record and, you know, you really focus on. So the moment we do it through spend, because it is a much easier figure to record how many jobs we create, we do through the Zameli enterprises, where we actually fund those enterprises, but where we're procuring, and a lot of procurement is done, and it creates a huge number of jobs. And the only way we can do that is to start tracking it through our suppliers. We've currently started to include that in some of our contracts, but it's initial days to ask our suppliers to report on who they are employing at all levels.
Thank you. Does that cover the list you had?
Yes, Chairman, I think we have covered the list. I think there was only one on Zibulo, on Inyosi. What in fact is happening is that that BE transaction in Yossi refers to all the new coal developments that we will do in South Africa will be under the umbrella of Anglo Coal in Yossi. So their first mine, which is coming into production, is one that we said is now currently being produced, being commissioned, which is over 6 million tons a year. And so the benefits will start to flow from that. But there again, this is another vendor-funded transaction where we committed to put in the capital for the development, and it's a very small equity contribution from the entrepreneurs. I think, Chairman, many of the questions are very valid, and as I said, they in essence reflect on the things that we are dealing with internally. And if it's appropriate, I think we wrote down a lot of notes. We're quite happy to write back to the committee and just give a formal written response, because you have a record of our presentation, and we'll be happy to write back and respond to the questions that we raised today.
Yeah.
In fact, Chair, in the light of considering time, it would actually be very wise if we could have assistance by, even if some of the questions have been answered, but we get a written reply document, so that where we haven't covered any areas, we are then able to continue our own work in terms of oversight with what we are querying here for future reference and communication. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's thank the team from Anglo-American and say this, that this is not the last engagement. We would certainly request you to come back, because the issues we're dealing with are of utmost importance in the country as a whole. Question of transformation, as you are aware, is a serious subject matter that is being debated in the discourse, in the public discourse that is obtaining as we speak, and specifically also the issue of job creation is also of utmost importance that we need to keep on discussing and at some point spend more time on the element of job creation. So we would certainly request you back here, maybe be very specific at that time. Now it's understandable it was the first encounter and we needed to give you an opportunity to give us your broad overview, which you have successfully done. And I dare to say that we shouldn't have started with you. We shouldn't have started with you, but we did start with you. So you have set quite a high bar for those that will follow. Thank you very much. Can we request the peers to then set themselves up? And Honorable Lucas? Okay, can you speak to them, to the mic, please?
I just noticed that the watch is not working.
Not working, yes.
On the wall.
I've since, since realized my wristwatch as well. When I look at it. Members, whilst the peers are setting, setting themselves up, can we grab tea and come back? Please, let's grab tea and come back. There's no